Sasia's sad corpse still lay tied to the rear end of the sled. The other Finns, too scared or prudent to go above, began taking turns at the small airdromes that lined the bottom rim of the sled. It was Toshio's job to keep the sled still, not easy in the churning water, but he did it without a thought. They were near the sloping western edge of a huge, grayish metal mound. Sea plants grew at intervals along its side. They looked nothing like the strangleweed, but that was no guarantee. More and more, Toshio was coming to dislike being here. He wished he was home, where the dangers were simple and easily handled. Kelp clingers and island turtles and the like, and where there were no ETs.
"Are you all right?"
Hikahi asked as she came by. The dolphin lieutenant radiated calm. "I'm fine," he grumped. "It's a good thing I didn't wait any longer to tell you about Aki's message. You have every reason to be mad at me."
"Don't be silly. Now we head back. Rukita is fatigued, so I've lashed him under an air dome. You will forge ahead with the scouts. We'll follow. Now, to take off."
"Aye, sir." Toshio took his bearings and pushed the throttle. The thrusters hummed as the sled accelerated. Several of the stronger swimmers maintained pace alongside as the mound slowly receded on the right. It had taken them 5 minutes or so to get started. They were barely underway before the tsunami hit. It was not a huge wave, merely the first of a series of ripples spreading from a point where a pebble had plunked into the sea. The pebble happened to be a spaceship half a kilometer long. It had plunked at supersonic speed a mere 50 kilometers away. The wave jerked the sled upward and sideways, almost shaking the boy off. A cloud of sea debris, torn up plants and dead and living fish, whirled about him like clods in a cyclone. The roar was deafening. Toshio clutched the controls desperately. Somehow, against incredible momentum, he managed slowly to drive the prow of the sled up and away from the wave front. Just in time, he thrust out of the curling downward circulation and sent the tiny craft flying along the direction the current wanted to go, eastward. An ash-gray form speared past him on his left. In a flash, he recognized Kipiru, struggling to keep control in the churning waters. The Finn squeaked something indecipherable in trinary, then was gone. Some instinct guided Toshio, or perhaps it was the sonar screen, now a mess of jumbled snow, but still bearing the faint, fading traces of the terrain map it had shown only moments before. Toshio forced the sled to bear left as hard as possible. The emergency power roar of the engines changed to a scream as he suddenly slewed hard to port in desperation. The huge, dark bulk of a metal mound loomed ahead. Already he could feel undertow as the wave began to form breakers to his right, curling as the cycloid rode up the sloping shore of the island. Toshio wanted to cry out, but the struggle took all of his breath. He clenched his teeth and counted as terrible seconds passed. The sled drove past the cliff-like northern shore amid a cloud of bubbles. Though he was still underwater, Toshio could look downward a dozen meters to his right and see the lower beach plants of the island. He was riding in the center of a tall mound of water. Then he was past. The sea opened up, and one of the deep oceanic rills lay below, dark and seemingly bottomless. Toshio slammed the bow planes forward and vented his tanks. The sled plummeted faster than he had ever dived before. His stern pulled forward precariously. Toshio passed clouds of falling debris. Darkness and cold came up at him, and he sought the chill as a refuge. The valley sloped as he brought the sled to a quiet depth. He could sense the tsunami rolling above. Sea plants all around waved in an obviously unaccustomed manner. A slow rain of falling rubbish drifted down on all sides, but at least the water wasn't trying to beat him to death anymore.
Toshio flattened out his dive and headed toward the valley center, away from everything. Then he let himself sag in an agony of bruised muscles and adrenaline reaction. He blessed the tiny man-designed symbiotes that were right now scavenging his blood of excess nitrogen, preventing narcosis raptures at this depth. Toshio cranked the engines down to one quarter, and they sighed, sounding almost relieved. The lamps on the sled's display were mostly green, surprisingly. One telltale caught his eye. It indicated an air dome in operation. Suddenly, Toshio noticed a faint singing sound. It was a whistling of patience and reverence. The ocean is, an endless sigh of dreaming, of other seas that are, and others in them, dreaming. Toshio snapped on the hydrophones.
Brokita, are you okay? Is your air all right?
There was a sigh, tremulous and tired.
Fleet fingers, hello, thank you for saving my life. You flew as truly as any Tursiops. That ship we saw must have crashed. If that's what it was, you can bet there will be aftershocks. Maybe we'd better stay down here a while.
I'll turn on the sonar, so others can come for air while the waves pass. He flicked a switch, and immediately a low series of clicks emanated into the surrounding water.
Brukita groaned. They will not come, Toshio. Can't you hear them? They won't answer your call.
Toshio frowned.
They have to. Hikahi will know about the aftershocks. They're probably looking for us right now. Maybe I'd better head back.
He moved to turn the sled and blow ballast. Brukita had started him worrying.
Don't go, Toshio. It will do no good for you to die as well. Wait until the waves pass. You must live to tell Crydike.
What are you talking about?
Listen, Sharp Eyes. Listen.
Toshio shook his head, then swore and pulled back on the throttle until the engine died. He turned up the gain on the hydrophones.
Do you hear? Brukita asked.
Toshio cocked his head and listened. The sea was a mess of intonation. The roar of the departing wave dopplered down as he lay there. Schools of fish made panicky noises. All around came the reports of rock slides and surf pounding on the islands. Then he heard it, the shrill, repetitive squeals of primal dolphin. No modern dolphin spoke it when fully in command of his faculties. That in itself was bad news. One of the cries was clear. He could easily make out the basic distress call. It was the earliest dolphin signal human scientists had understood. But the other noise, at least three voices were involved in that one. It was a strange sound, very poignant and very wrong.
It is rescue fever, Brukita groaned. Hikahi is beached and injured. She might have stopped this, but she is delirious and now adds to the problem.
Hikahi?
Like Crydike, she is an adept of Kanik, the study of logical discipline. She would have been able to force the others to ignore the cries of those washed ashore, to make them dive to safety for a time.
Don't they realize there will be aftershocks?
Shocks hardly matter, Sharp Eyes, Brukita cried. They may beach themselves without assist. You are Calafian. How can you not know this about us? I thrash here to go and die answering that call.
Toshio groaned. Of course, he knew about rescue fever, in which panic and fear washed aside the veneer of civilization, leaving a cetacean with only one thought, to save his comrades, whatever the personal risk. Every few years, the tragedy struck even the highly advanced fins of Calafia. Aki had told him once that sometimes the sea itself seemed to be calling for help. Some humans claimed to have felt it too, particularly those who took dolphin RNA in the rites of the dreamer cult. Once upon a time, the Tursiops, or bottlenose dolphin, had been about the least likely cetacean to beach itself. But genetic engineering had upset the balance somewhere. as the genes of other species were spliced into the basic tersiops models, a few things had been thrown out of kilter.